Terry, you're the boss tonight, and you don't give a fuck what they all say, right?
Baby Pictures of Famous Dictators Podcast, Episode 7. Guys on Guys on Girls. Talking about Guys on Girls with David Salinas. Dave, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Dave recently introduced Wells Tower at the Columbia Graduate Writing Program Reading Series, and he has a degree in film studies and cultural theory from University of Texas.
And theater.
And theater. Theater. Is that a minor?
Yes, theater minor.
Congratulations on all of those degrees. So we're going to talk about, primarily we're going to talk about Guys on Girls, which is Slate Magazine's analysis of the popular, quotation marks around popular, television show Girls. Elaborate on that. Tell people at home if they're not familiar with the Slate column.
All right. Well, I will assume that all listeners out there know about Girls, so I won't go into detail about that. I will say that, you know, while we're going to be extremely critical,
You don't know that. Just say it's a half-hour comedy.
Girls is a half-hour comedy about the travails, mm-hmm. travails, and adventures of a bunch of beautiful, intelligent women living in Greenpoint or Brooklyn in general, living their 20s up, trying to figure out what they're up to.
That's a perfect explanation. Now move on to Guys on Girls.
So I just want to say before we start that we are both, I think it's fair to say, pretty big fans of the show Girls. We think it's hilarious.
It is a fantastic show.
Yeah, it's a great show. So with that caveat, Guys on Girls. So Guys on Girls is this weekly analysis / recap of the previous episode of Girls. So it usually comes out on Monday, and I would assume that they're writing it all night because they're fucking
9 a.m. up there.
So they're
and some of them go on to thousands and thousands of words.
Oh my god, it's unbearable. So we'll get into that. But so Guys on Girls is primarily the brainchild, the magnum opus of one David Hagland,
the cultural critic for Slate Magazine,
the cultural critic,
their browbeat blog,
yeah, their browbeat blog. Who I looked you up on LinkedIn, bro, and University of Chicago, Oxford doctorate. We'll leave it at that. But so it is a well-read, I would assume, because there's a lot of commentary on other
hundreds of comments.
Yeah,
hundreds and
it's on. You know, Jezebel writes about it, and other big terrible websites write about it. But so the general format of Guys on Girls is, you know, they'll start with some back.
They
and
bring
forth.
In a luminary. They bring in a ringer.
Well, that's the thing. They bring in. It's every. They bring in pretty much every of the, like, the big male circle jerk of Slate Magazine, from the senior editor, of like senior political editors to other cultural editors to just, you know, general goofballs on Slate. They will bring them on to also discuss, like, the senior editor, the senior political editors. Like, you know, they go on Rachel Maddow, these guys. Yeah, they have time between Rachel Maddow and, like,
to email Hagland their thoughts on Marnie's outfit.
Exactly. Between that and, like, stealing their ideas from, like, Mother Jones, they come up and they have discussions, quote-unquote, with Haggles. And just go into it as in-depth as they think the show deserves. So the general format is they'll start off and they'll have like a little quote-unquote witty repartee. It'll start off with a reference to the show that they just watched. So it'll be like
there's a philosophical inquiry that starts every episode. Is this the worst episode of Girls?
Well, that's the title. And then they'll start off and Haggers is like, Hey, wasn't last show Amazers? You know, because Shoshers.
isn't this Face Space?
Yeah. Exactly. That was the last one. So they'll do that, and then they'll
I'll provide a link for everyone. Some of the highlight recaps.
Episode 5, which we will get into much
depth.
A two-parter, which, don't worry, we're going to cover this.
Subtitled Haglund's Absolution.
The Guys on Girls heard round the blogosphere.
Yes.
We'll get into that. So they intellectualize it. It starts off as this weird, boring recap of the episode where they'll just say what happened and interject their little quirky little, oh, and wasn't that crazy? Oh, man. And then it gets ridiculous. And I, we'll get, let's just.
There is no bottom to that rabbit hole.
No. It's completely awful, and David Haglund is kind of the worst human being on the planet. So we will discuss that now. I mean, that's the general...
That's a great ballast for our discussion. Yeah. So let's go general to begin with and say, do you think that the show warrants this intellectualization, this examination, this microscopic sort of down-the-telescope mm-hmm. view of the show?
I don't know. I was thinking about it, and I'm not quite sure, because you know what? This is, like... general fans, like, one of the better shows on TV, if not, like, the top echelon of quality television. Well-directed, for the most part, well-written, well-acted, especially by Lena Dunham. She's fantastic in it. So...
She could be a bad actress sometimes.
I think all of
them
can.
When we get to episode 5.
Yeah. Don't worry, we'll get there. So, but at the same time, the idea that this is some kind of cultural phenomenon that should be taken as... on the level of some, like, Bob Dylan album in the 60s as important to, like...
Roland Barthes, yeah. If he was alive, would be sitting on the Barth beat, yeah. just thinking about yeah. girls.
Analyzing the philosophical existential undertones of what's going on. So, no, I don't think so. You know, I think there is... In general, I don't think it's worth all this kind of commentary. I think maybe when it began, it was... what the press that it got was warranted because it was a fresh thing going on, and it still is a fresh thing that's happening on television. But at the same time, I think there is more subversive things happening on, like, fucking Modern Family or something, you know, which... and I mean, like you were saying, it doesn't get that many viewers on a weekly basis.
It gets on average 700,000 viewers, which is less than 1/4 the... average rerun of The Big Bang Theory on TBS.
Exactly.
So this show has, in the grand scheme of things, the cultural pull of a millipede. But it's not an ant. It's a little stronger than the millipede. But I do think that it's sometimes... I think when it's at its best, mm-hmm. it's maybe the second best show on TV next to Mad Men.
Oh.
When it gets to those heights.
I've never seen Mad Men, actually.
Well, you're not in this conversation, man. You're out in it. But I think also when it's at its worst, it's still one of the top 5 comedies on TV.
Yeah, like, it's great. I mean, episode 5. I'd rather watch episode 5 than an episode of fucking Walking Dead or something.
Walking Dead, we're never going to talk about on this podcast ever. If you're still watching that show, you're the zombie. You're the fucking zombie. Turn it off.
Absolutely.
But I think that the show welcomes all of this thing because, I mean, it appeals to the demographic that writes about these things, which is a huge part of it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, all the people that are writing these things are all New York-based. They're all, I would assume, Brooklynites, because I don't really think that Slate would pay enough to some of these people to actually help them afford a Manhattan loft or railroad apartment. So they all think that they have the voice that can comment on this in an accurate way. And they don't, because they're all over 30. And...
Once you're over 30, yeah. you're fucking yeah. done. You have no perspective on what it's like to be in Greenhouse on Coke.
Exactly. Like, 5 years from now, or however old I am, 6 years from now, I will not ever do another podcast with you, Carmen. So
we'll see about that.
We'll be talking about the politics in Libya or something.
Yes, yeah, something bigger than this. But is there anything bigger than this?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is the stuff that interests me, and this is the stuff that interests most people our age, and I don't think that's a bad thing. But at the same time, the intellectualization of what specifically Guys on Girls is doing is just absolutely horrendous. Yes. And some of the things they say is, like, offensive.
Pull up one of the more egregious quotes.
All right, let's see here.
Also, at the same time, the show is very much a dramatization of Lena Dunham's live journal.
Fine.
Yeah,
you know,
which can be great.
Yeah, it's a reflection of where we are as just a youth, and not that I know a lot of people.
Not only in our age bracket, but also yeah. in, like, the cultural age bracket, I feel like it does think it delves into stuff that other shows don't, mm-hmm. whatever you want, Twitter, blogosphere, bullshit.
Let's see, there was this really horrendous quote. Let me see if I can find it. I don't know if I'll find it later, but
we'll research it later.
It was basically they're like, I think Haglund asked somebody on some, like, senior political editor, just like, what the fuck? First of all, second of all, they asked
he's literally emailing him from Chechnya about girls
that he's pirating on some bullshit bandwidth. Anyway, so he asked, do you think? how do you feel about Marnie being happy? And this guy was like, I have no problem with Marnie being happy. As if it was his to decide.
Neither do I.
I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I can't believe the arrogance that goes into some of these statements. And
well, not only the arrogance, but the vitriol sometimes. And we're going to talk about that. Yeah. That's a good segue, because the show, unlike any other, inspires hatred from the masses.
Exactly.
Just scathing, rancorous, very angry comments. We're going to talk about Lena Dunham's floral rompers in a bit, because that's usually the first point. But we're going to start with racism, which is everyone, a lot of people's favorite topic about the show.
Oh my God, I those are some of the most fun things to read.
So before we get into that, we're going to say, considering the countless minority characters that we fell in love with on Seinfeld, Friends, Frasier, Everybody Loves Raymond, Cheers, Married with Children, and your favorite show, Will of Grace.
Absolutely.
And every other half-hour comedy that ever succeeded in the history of television. Do you consider girls' lack of casting diversity an issue?
I don't. And I've talked about this before with people who are, like, I got kind of upset. And I think maybe understandably. No, fuck that. Not understandably. They're completely off base about the fact that it's all. There's. In the first season, there are actually no minorities present. Yeah. At all.
Not even on the subway car.
Exactly. So,
not even at Atlantic Avenue Station.
But as a reflection of these girls' lives and their perspective, and which is kind of, you know, parallels pretty nicely with some of the people I know, there are no minorities present except the Lebanese guy. They go to the bodega and get their bacon, egg, and cheese when they're hungover. So I've never thought that was actually an issue. I did find it pretty egregious and infuriating when they injected the conservative black guy into the show.
Well, that was more like a barb to the critics, I feel.
Okay,
especially when they yanked him after two episodes.
And you know, he's conservative at the beginning. But you know, I think they're missing the point, these critics. And I don't actually remember if Haggers got into that. They definitely talked about it. I don't know what Haggers' point of view was, because he seems like he's completely intellectually inconsistent. So, but I think the point you should be trying at, that what you should be asking when it comes to girls and race is not why is girls so devoid of any minority. It's why is HBO only picking shows that are completely devoid of minorities, or why does HBO feel the need to broadcast so much? So many shows that are centered around white people and white people problems.
And why does the responsibility of holding up this equality thing fall on this show that's a half-hour comedy?
Exactly.
Has literally 10 episodes under its belt when this critique was going around. And if it's a highly autobiographical show.
Absolutely.
And if it's going to be representative of her experience. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't hang out with any black people.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I found the injection of... what show is that guy on, that black guy?
Community.
And the Community guy.
Childish Gambino.
Particularly annoying or egregious. I just thought it was, maybe it's a middle finger to the critics, but at the same time, it seemed so pandering and annoying. And, you know, the fact that they actually talked about race in that, I was just, this would never happen. Nothing needs to be realistic. I don't know. It hit me on a gut level as something kind of, it pissed me off, but that's okay. I mean, I'm fine with that. It didn't deter really from my appreciation for this show, but it did. I did love reading all the horrendous commentary about that. That was bad. And
no one ever asks where all the white people are on Tyler Perry's House of Pain.
Exactly. There's
why aren't we represented there? TBS.
Well, a lot of TBS. That's the thing about Slate. There. Slate is especially guilty with this white guilt thing. On Martin Luther King Day, I was actually shocked that there were there was so little white guilt presented on the website. And you know, Dana Stevens is not talking about, you know, what films are released and how. Dana Stevens being the film critic, and she's also the worst film critic in America. But
worse than Rex Reed?
Oh, absolutely worse than Rex
Impossible.
Reed. Worse than Jay Hoberman, who's gone downhill lately. Yes, so they are especially very, very conscious of how they come off when it comes to race relations. So I was shocked on Martin Luther King Day when Slate was just, I think they might have ignored it totally and just focused totally on the election.
Totally on girls.
On the and in the inauguration, it was the same day. So, which is understandable. I mean, it's a big event, quote unquote, but at the same time, it is MLK Day, and our first black president is being inaugurated again, and there were no think pieces about what it means to be white in a post-race world. And stuff like
that. The post-race world of Greenpoint.
Oh, and that's a thing about girls. I'm sorry, not girls, guys on girls. There was this one quote, if I can find it really fast, but it was basically, well, that episode where they talk, where
it's the first episode
of the season. And they were so upset by that episode because they were hating on the youth of America, people our age, for aiming to live in a world that is colorblind, which is, you know, a noble goal, whether it's achievable or not. But they were just like, fuck these kids. Fuck their idealism and their desire to live in a world without race, and where race doesn't matter. Fuck them. It's just because we elected the first black president that they think that we need to, that all of us need to be colorblind. It's like, I just don't think that's possible. As if even aiming to achieve that kind of perspective when it comes to race is naive and plausible. Bullshit. Yeah, then it's like, go fuck yourself, man. And I get it, you know, I understand the realism argument, but at the same time, like, fuck
and
you.
No one is making that argument for that utopian state.
You bearded David Haggers motherfucker, mildly overweight and beady glasses.
So, one touchy subject, racism, we're going to transfer right now to rapism.
Holy shit. Here we go.
So there was, two episodes ago, another scene that got controversial, Classic Girls, in which Adam, masculine psychopath.
Psychopath, absolutely, but definitely one of my favorite characters on the show.
Definitely one of the best. I mean, the guy characters are considerably better than the girl characters.
Debatable. Some of the guy characters, I mean, Charlie.
You don't like Charlie.
Charlie's the worst person in the show.
That's why he's dating the worst person in the world.
Yeah. I remember, okay, so that was episode...
Nine.
Where...
on all fours.
On all fours, crawling through the apartment. There's nails here. He's like, do it. Do you like my cock and all this stuff? And
I can like your cock without being a whore.
Like, just...
Just, which is true.
Just thinking about, throwing away all the implications of that, like, possible sexual assault, you know, debatable whether we want to go
for
there.
For sex.
Yeah, when it comes to Haggers and guys on girls, and they're, like, absolute disgust for what happened. I mean, they seem, this was... earnest and true that they were like revolted by what happened, but I would ebb on the side of them being like projecting their disgust,
political correctness.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh my god, like I felt dirty, I felt disgusted,
took a shower after that episode. I wish we could just dance in our room and listen to Robin again. I don't like how dark this show is getting.
Yeah, and they were just so offended by it, and I was just mad at them.
I mean, anyone who's been with that character through the entire season knows that he is a recovering alcoholic since he was 17.
Yeah.
He had this, I mean, he just saw Hannah, he has his first drink, and he obviously doesn't know how to express any sort of intimacy or emotion with this girl who he wants to, but he's just reverting constantly.
And I can understand, like, his desire, you know, he sees Hannah, who he was, by the end of season one, obsessed with, and... he sees her, and he sees her vulnerable and physically, like, ill and mentally, like, in a really horrible place. And I can understand why he might attempt to sabotage things with this girl, even subconsciously, by reverting to...
That's the whole point of the scene.
By reverting to his, atavistic instinct, but they didn't get that at all. They were just... Oh, this is horrendous. What does this mean? What did they say? It was a rebuke to porn.
A rebuke to porn. With the ill-framed cum shot.
Oh my god. Hearing these guys talk about And you know what? Haggers, the way he like described both episode 5, which is the fantasy sequence debatable, but the sequence where she goes with Patrick Wilson into his house and has this fantasy love affair in this beautiful Greenpoint house. But between that and the episode where Adam debatably, and I don't want to make a comment on that because I'm male and it's like not my place to make a comment that I think. But
not to implicate either of us,
yeah.
But getting way too drunk and forcing sex on your girlfriend is a thing that has happened before in the history of humanity.
But just maybe. Just a question. I mean, first of all, was she even... wasn't she receptive to it at first? I don't remember quite so much. I mean, she...
She was reluctantly...
reluctantly accepted. I mean, he did make her crawl through nails and sawdust and garbage. And he was talking to her like she was a pig or something. But so back to Haggers. So between his analysis of episode 5 and his analysis of this sexual assault that happened in episode 9, I really do think this guy is better suited. This Oxford doctor is better suited like writing porno recaps on like porno websites that people like jerk off to. It's
you don't have any quotes, pulled quotes?
Let me see.
Maybe look through that.
Yeah, go ahead and keep talking. I'll find some really good quotes here. Let's see.
Talking about porn, talking about nakedness. Now we're gonna talk. Now we're gonna talk about style.
Well,
or do you not? You wanna elaborate on this point more?
Let's see. I don't know where all my quotes went. I mean, this document that I was compiling of all the different egregious,
you have a whole manifesto in here.
Were just it ran like 6 pages because between Haglund and all his like circle jerk coterie, it was just absolutely unbearable.
The rebuke to porn.
The rebuke to porn. The rebuke to porn was especially hilarious.
How do you feel that scene is a rebuke to porn?
I don't.
The girl isn't super receptive to it.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he mention Money Shot?
And he mentioned Money Shot, and he mentioned rape fantasy.
And he also like did this terrible like euphemistic description of a money shot like on her chest. And it was, like, strangely, like, catering, I thought, to the people that jerk off to comments on porno websites. It was disgusting.
Interesting
I've been
approach
talking,
to that.
I've been talking with a friend about, like, people we feel sorry about their spouses for. And I definitely feel sorry for Haglund's wife. And, like, after episode 5 analysis and his bullshit apology for that, which was unreadable. Like,
we could talk about that because the original framing for the argument for episode 5 is that it was the worst episode of Girls ever, and
yep.
It literally couldn't translate or scan in Haglund's brain. He said nothing in here works.
Yeah.
He said nothing made sense for him in the episode, and then the next day, so overrun with emotion and regret, seeing now the artistic vision mm-hmm. of one man's trash, mm-hmm. he issued a formal apology.
But it was a bullshit apology,
very
though.
Bullshit.
It was, okay, so what happened in the first recap, it's him and this also really terrible guy, like Eglund or something. He looks like a more decrepit Spike Jones. I looked him up. So him and...
we can attach a picture.
Yeah. Him and Haggers went to town on this episode talking about how it was unrealistic and...
That was the best thing, that their argument was this juvenile sort of high school mm-hmm. locker room argument, like, Patrick Wilson would never fuck a
yeah,
fat girl.
It was so offensive.
Such backhand superficiality. It was great, especially from these Oxford doctorates.
I know. Wait, hold on. I think I can find some quotes for that, because it was absolutely unbelievably offensive. Well, they were talking about how they said that, I cannot believe that someone with great pecs like Patrick Wilson would shack up
Night with... Owl from Watchmen.
Watchmen, another discussion-worthy movie. But how Patrick Wilson with his great pecs would shack up for like a weekend of sex and thrills and debauchery and naked ping pong. And they were saying that Hannah is so arrogant by the question she asked him, that Hannah was so offensively forward and vulnerable to this man, how Hannah was ungraceful when she played naked ping pong. Like, how could someone as attractive as Patrick Wilson, given how beautiful Patrick Wilson's wife, that's not me saying that, that's actually them, they linked to a picture of, or the Twitter or something, of Patrick Wilson's actual wife. How could this man ever be attracted to Hannah / Lena Dunham? And the vitriol that poured out justifiably from that original post
The editor definitely went to him and said, you gotta write something because you guys sound like a bunch of fucking
idiots. And Hagelin probably went to his wife. He's like, what should I do? And she was like, I don't know, man. You sounded like a dickhead. And then he was like, all right, I'm gonna write a bullshit apology that is borderline unintelligible but still defends myself. It's that kind of Weasley apology where someone's like, I'm sorry you were offended. Yes. If anyone was offended, I'm sorry. Instead of, I'm sorry I was so offensive.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing he wrote. And fuck him for doing that, you know? Like, when I read, like, I think we were talking about this earlier, I was wondering, how mean should I be to Haggers?
And you're getting very angry. Maybe dial it back.
All right, I'm sorry.
You don't want to get into invective.
Okay. Yeah,
we don't want libel suits in the podcast.
All right, fine. But it was awful, and that apology was
equally awful.
The apology heard around the blogosphere.
But let's say that the apology received 5 times as many comments as the original post. So maybe Haggles was playing us all. He's playing us into the one man's trash trap. One Haggles trash is another Haggles gold.
Well, from what I understand about the way these kind of websites work, I mean, your pay grade and your job is dependent on how many views you get. Exactly. So and maybe
genius play.
Exactly. Haggers played us all with that.
Yeah, in that superficial critique of Lena Dunham's physical appearance and beauty and Joan of Arc haircut.
And in that apology, he was like, perhaps I talked about Patrick Wilson's body in comparison to Lena Dunham's too much. And I regret...
Maybe.
I regret what that says about me as a man. And I was like, but then he goes on and defends himself. It's a genius, brilliant little piece of like a statement of where we are as a culture, where men are in 21st century society. Men between age 23 and I think Hagelin's like 78 or something.
So he's 32, okay. Maybe. But they talk a lot about Hannah's style through all the guys on girls. They're obsessed with her floral rompers and her provocations. Her I think they call them sartorial provocations to the American idea of female sexuality.
They hate the fashion on the show.
Hate it.
As if they're like dashing young men.
And yet Charlie's tucked in shirts go completely unremarked upon. Well, whenever I see them, I gasp in my room, looking at my computer, I gasp audibly and I say, he's done it again. He's tucked in his shirt again.
He's tucked in his over.
But the guys on girls don't give a shit.
Yeah, well, they never talk about Charlie.
Well, why would you?
But there is something going on with Charlie all of a sudden, like in a month, creating an app, a full-blown Forbid.
Look us up on Forbid, girls.
That in which he makes a shit ton of money, just kidding, but it's enough, direct quote, which is actually pretty hilarious. But
kind of funny.
Well, because it shows just how arrogant he is, but also just how insecure he is about, you know, his whole thing. But that they would never go into Charlie. I was wondering if they just saw too much in this douchebag in themselves that they never want to comment on him too much.
Well, he's the least complex character.
Oh, he's awful. And his shirts are too tight and they're always tucked in. He always has this huge belt buckle and his pants look weird and he has a terrible beard. And yeah, I hate Charlie. I'm sorry. Marty can do better. And I love Marty.
Marty cannot do better. She's horrible.
I love Marnie. I think
Charlie is shallow. Marnie is a teaspoon at the bottom of the dredged Atlantic.
No, come on. When Marnie was like, this is the worst, this has been the worst year of my life.
Has it?
Yes, obviously it has. She's
to move in and show Shauna's gigantic loft. She's making $500 a night as a hostess.
Oh, Shoshers. Love you, Shoshers. You're my favorite.
So, the question we had before was, so Lena Dunham style, does it make you want to die, want to kill yourself, or want to die while killing yourself?
Lena Dunham style doesn't really make me want to kill myself. The style of the guys makes me want to kill myself. In particular, Charlie and, what's his name? Not Adam.
He doesn't dress.
Well, Adam looks great. So fit. No, the other guy. What's his name?
Ray.
Ray
dresses in Arrested Development mode. Not Arrested Development, the show. Arrested Development, and he's like an 18-year-old.
Funny t-shirts and like slightly baggy jeans and stuff. So, no, Lena Dunham's doing her thing. It
doesn't bother me either.
Well, sometimes Jessa's outfits, I'm like, God damn it.
Flowing Jedi Knight robes.
And have you noticed in Guys on Girls the way they are... so put off by the fact that Jessa / what's the actress's name? I can't remember. Jemina Kirk. That she's pregnant, and the way they try to hide it, and they're like, I was distracted knowing that she was pregnant, and they try to hide it between like flowing dresses and put her belly behind bushes. I was like, oh my God.
Put her belly behind bushes.
That is in the analysis I think the episode where they go meet her parents, and I could not believe what I was reading yet again, and my jaw dropped, and I was just, this is a fascinating and genius move on Hagar's and his friend's part to get page views, because you just can't get more offensive to some of the things
because when you search out for Community on the internet, you have to think someone else is as angry about Jess's belly being covered up by flowing robes as I am. I'm going to find that person, and then I'm going to patronize them.
You know you're doing something wrong when the lion's share of comments, which are like the worst people in the world who will write comments on Slate or anything, the lion's share of them are still like, and they're all like misogynistic guys and stuff. And they're like, you went too far, bro.
Don't knock her when she's beggars. Yeah. She's vulnerable.
Yeah, it's bullshit. So, I mean, her style doesn't offend me most of the time. I don't think any of the girls' style. I like
Shosher's hair.
Shosher's hair. Shosher's
great encapsulation of the classic NYU girl style.
Yeah, and Shosher's is real, man. Shosher's of all the people that are supposed to not give a fuck on that show, Shosher's truly does not give a fuck, and I love that about her. She's my favorite character on the show. She's so sweet and so nice.
Interesting viewpoint.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I'm the minority there.
She's your favorite character?
Yeah, her and Marnie. I like Marnie. I think Marnie's really interesting.
Do you?
I do.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Sure you just don't think she's very attractive?
Of course she's very attractive. I think all the girls on the show are very attractive, but Shosher's... the Marnie. Marnie, I feel really bad for her. I mean,
sucks at art.
Well, they were saying that when it comes to Marnie's view on art, when she told Booth... what's his name? Booth Jonathan.
In his Iron Maiden of television.
In his Iron Maiden of television, blasting like...
Duncan Sheik.
Barely breathing. Yeah. When she comes out and says, you're a fucking genius. They were saying that's evidence that she is like...
A Philistine.
Yeah, a Philistine when it comes to art. Like, and she is no aesthete. So I thought... you know, maybe she was just lonely and wanted to...
Desperate.
...shack up with Booth Tarrington? Booth Jonathan.
Look at the doll. Maybe she just wanted to look at the doll and figure out how it feels. Does it feel sassy? It feels repulsed.
She wanted to have a little fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And sometimes you just have to flatter an ego like Booth Jonathan, so...
And she was repressing all her aspirations of being a professional singer at the same time. It's tough.
Oh, my God.
She was misappropriating her talents. She's a really pretty voice.
What did Ray say about the... He's like, I'm experienced in the Mac app
recording.
Yeah, the GarageBand Arts or something like that. Hilarious. It's a good show, man.
What are we going to talk about now? So as a 20-nothing liberal arts educated empty person.
Yes.
Do you feel the show captures your experience in the Brooklyn intelligentsia? Are these people Brooklyn intelligentsia?
I think so.
Faux intelligentsia?
No, I mean...
They went to Oberlin.
Oh my God. And how much does Guys on Girls hate Oberlin?
In their defense, I also hate Oberlin.
Well, as someone who knows very little about Oberlin, but it is like incredibly clear that these guys just have like this vendetta against Oberlin.
Well, I watched a lot of How I Met Your Mother, and all the characters went to Wesleyan on the show, so there's like hatred for Oberlin there. It's like Oberlin.
Gary Steingart went there, I think. He's my
good reference point. Oh, in that case, Oberlin's great, but do you think it captures your experience?
No, I think not my experience personally, but I have seen people like that, and I know people who are friends with definite Hannah types and Marnie types, and not necessarily Shosh types.
We're going to get to which characters we are at the end. Yep.
Not necessarily Shosh types, but...
I've met Shosh types.
Oh, I mean, I've fallen...
She is the paradigmatic NYU girl. It's incredible. The
way they NYU, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... She is... Oh, okay, so that's incredibly accurate.
She definitely goes to Gallatin, because she's never at class. Never. You familiar with this? The Design Your Own Major program at NYU?
No.
People have majored in superhero theory. Like, line cook.
Great stuff. Shoshers is incredibly accurate.
Yeah, and dead on.
And I've definitely known Jessos that I've fallen in love with in my youth.
Marnies are there.
There are definitely Marnies. I mean, Marnies... So, in terms of... them being accurate representations, yeah, sure, why not? I mean, as much as you can in a show where you have to categorize and kind of
stereotype
a little bit, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. So, yeah, I have no problem with that, and I hate when people say this is not the Brooklyn I know. Well, you know what? Fuck you and Brooklyn Heights. And
I'll never understand why, though. I think it's pretty reflective of experience. Why no scene takes place in a bar? Ever.
Really? Well, what about when they go to Greenland, or what's that bar
called?
Greenhouse.
they go to Greenhouse.
That's a bar.
That's a club.
There is that great scene in involving my girl, Jessa, who's hilarious in a riot in the first season where she's supposed to go get her abortion, and instead she stops
by the bar. She goes
by the bar, and she gets the right Russian.
Bloody fingers.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Jesus. But that guy comes up and says, can I borrow your phone? And he's like, there's a bunch of texts here. And he's like, shut up, mind your business. And I thought that was great. And then he's like, what are you drinking? And she has like a little like white Russian mustache. She's like, milk. And I was like, that's hilarious.
Well, she's pregnant. She's responsible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The white Russian is the most
responsible. Let's go through some experiences that have been depicted on the show, if you've done them, why you're in. Just to gauge how
representative. We're going to get a little bit personal here, okay. But why not?
First one, thrown your trash in a neighboring brownstone's garbage can.
Oh, absolutely. I think I might say that.
As have I.
Now. Absolutely.
I did it this morning.
Yeah.
Have you been to an unnecessarily opulent NYU party?
Yes. Absolutely.
As have I.
Where it's like a masquerade themed or something. Yes.
Have you ever giggled and canoodled in Spoonville and Sugartown bookstore in Williamsburg?
I have not. I've only been there once, and I actually bought two books there. And they were used copies, and I was very happy to find them because I've been looking everywhere. So
I got some great John Updike first editions there.
I got some Thomas Mann. Yeah, it was great. Spoonbill, I can.
I've done it, man. Have you ever FaceTime with a psychopath?
I've never FaceTimed, but I have G-chatted with a psychopath. I have Google Video chatted with a psychopath.
G-hang or something?
Yes.
Google Hangout.
Yes, because that's just, I'm an accommodating guy, and I don't want to leave someone in the lurch there.
So. And have you ever cried in the Bedford Avenue L station?
No, I have not. I have cried in the Metropolitan. That's the green... No, that's the... Yeah, that's
the G train.
No. Well, it's where the G connects to the L. It's like
that's where worlds meet.
It's like East Williamsburg. Yeah, definitely that one. I'm just kidding.
I've cried in both of those stations.
I've cried in the Bushwick, every Bushwick stop many times.
So to demonstrate the show, it captures at least
absolutely
in scene. Who hasn't done
Molly and gone to a gay bar or something? And just
I haven't done that either. Is that on the show? They don't do Molly on the show.
No, they do. They do coke in the bathroom, and
which isn't actually the bathroom in Greenhouse. It's from a different.
I heard. Yeah, I've never. Have you been to Greenhouse?
I haven't been. No.
Where is Greenhouse?
I have no idea. How would I know?
meat packing. Let's go after when we're done
recording. I mean, I've had a gay roommate, and it was awesome. We didn't fight as much, and I didn't
a lot of nights at Boiler
kick him out or anything. No, a lot of nights is what I think is a now closed bar, gay bar in Williamsburg called Sugarlands. Those are fun times. I've never felt more attractive than when I'm at a gay bar.
And you won't. That was your peak for attractiveness.
Okay, more hypotheticals. Moving on. Would you rather, A, read Hannah's ebook?
Mm-hmm.
B, attend a gallery opening curated by Marnie?
Mm.
C, climb into a bathtub with Jessa? Or D, crash a bougie NYU party with Soch?
I could really get down with crashing an NYU party with Shoshers. Read Hannah's ebook, definitely not, even though I do like Hannah.
Do you want to try to guess what the title of Hannah's ebook would be?
My Life in the Bush of Ghosts. I have no idea.
Perks of Being a White Person. Also, The Eight, I thought was a potential title.
The Eight? What do you mean, The Eight?
Like her eight tick. Oh. Does everything.
Oh my god. That is a really good title, I actually think.
Politically incorrect?
Yeah, that's the best title. You know? God is not great.
You're welcome. God is not eight.
No, but I actually do think, you know, I hate gallery openings. They're just an excuse for people to get loaded and no one looks at the art. So I hate those. I would definitely climb in a bathtub with Jessa and just...
Clothes or no clothes?
Whatever she wants. Whatever she wants. And just have a little quirky repartee, you know, and she'll blend that perfect balance she has when she's in the bathtub between misanthropic and vulnerability.
Have you ever been in a bathtub with one of your friends?
Male or female?
Male.
No. Female friend? No. So, but I could get down with Jessa. She seems like she would make no big deal about it, and then that would influence me to like lose my inhibitions and definitely, yeah. Bathtub with Jessa, no contest.
There was an ill-fated night in Atlantic City where my friends and I, a couple of my guy friends, we decided, oh, we're going to splurge for one of these rooms with a hot tub and we're going to get all these broads back with us. So we got this hotel room with a hot tub in it. And this is to say, we all struck out with every girl we hit on. Ended up just like sitting in the hot tub at 5 o'clock in the morning with the sun coming up in our bathing suits, just like crying.
Four bros. Yeah. Is that the same thing as getting in like a little tiny bathtub in a terrible Greenpoint apartment?
With two girls, maybe.
No, it's the same. Like four guys in a hot tub at 4 a.m. is definitely as vulnerable as you can get.
It was the peak of my vulnerability. Since then, my skin is really hardened. Sub question of the last question. Would you rather help Adam with his woodworking installation? Mm-hmm. Is that a boat?
Yeah, he's making a raft or something, isn't he? Or sure. A boat. Yeah.
I thought it was a stairway.
I thought it was too. I mean, it's really tall.
Stairway to heaven type thing.
The question that comes up with that is like, how is he going to get out of his apartment? But
that was the point.
Yeah, what's her name brings it up.
He's never going to change. He's never going to get out of there. He's stuck in his own consciousness. He never finishes anything, Adam.
Yeah. Poor Adam never finishes anything. He's non-committal. But no, it's definitely a seafaring vessel. Okay. For sure.
Help Adam with his woodworking installation / seafaring vessel. Download Charlie's Forbid app, or drink a Grumpy's coffee brewed by Ray.
All right. So Adam, woodworking installation vessel.
So you're like his PA on this.
Well, I wouldn't choose that. I mean, because that means you have to like spend time in his what looks like underground, dingy apartment. And
they definitely compare him to the underground man. So
yeah, I mean, I would like step on a nail and get tetanus or something with my luck. So no, definitely not Adam. Though I do think we would have a good time. Charlie's Forbid app. No, I'm not a psychopath. I don't need Forbid to keep me from emailing or calling or texting specific women in my life. Psychopaths. No,
I do. My ex-girlfriends wish I would buy that fucking app.
my ex-male friends, my ex-BFFs wish I would do that. Because I just send them hateful things now. I'm just kidding. So I would drink coffee with Ray. I think we could have a nice little hateful conversation about the world. And what's great about drinking coffee with him at Grumpy's is you can leave pretty, you can escape really easily. So you can't escape Adam's apartment quite easily without, you know, getting cut.
Right.
On
I don't drink. Nail. I don't drink coffee. So that one's
you
out.
You don't?
I don't, no.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Sorry, man. So that one's
green
out.
Green tea?
Nah. Don't do tea either.
No caffeine?
In the morning, I'm a juice guy. I like apple.
Apple juice is fantastic.
I like orange juice.
You throw a little a little rum in that apple?
No.
Okay.
trying to start my day. Trying to lose that tonight.
Not even after you're going to have to go to workshop or something.
No. I drink Red Bull in dire circumstances.
All right.
The 4-bit app, $10, not to call people. I'd rather just harass people for free.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much.
That's the way to also get them to just, like,
yeah, so I'm pretty much in Adam's cell.
Yep.
With no shirt on, cuff jeans, building the boat with him. I mean, I'm intrigued by woodworking. I think it's a great art form I'd like to learn more about.
The only thing keeping me from choosing to woodwork with Adam and, like, talk literature with him, because he's a literary guy, it's great.
Yeah. He's well-read.
And is that I don't want to get tetanus.
Well, Natalia was fine.
But she only went to his apartment once, and then he made her crawl through the nails and sawdust, and then he sexually assaulted her, pretty much. So, yeah. But Adam woodworking close second.
Second? Like the second?
Second to Grumpy's Coffee with Ray.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's second season. Moving on, postulating about the third season. We're going to move into conjecture now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what would you like to see in the third season? From where the characters left off, I'll just give a quick recap for those. Spoilers now. Turn off the podcast. Save yourself. Marnie and Charlie are now back together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Apparently, we can suppose that Adam and Hannah are back together.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray and our girl Shosh have broken up.
Yep.
Jessa is AWOL.
AWOL. Definitely want to see more Jessa. She's one of my favorite characters. Next to Shosh's.
That was mostly logistical that she wasn't in this season, that she was pregnant.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, so I understand that.
She was literally in 3 episodes, maybe.
Yeah, she left pretty quickly, and it made me upset, but I did find her leaving rather heartbreaking and understandable, considering that she is a floater in the wind.
And we get the past 2 seasons have been 10 episodes, and apparently the next one is 12, so
There'll
be more room to breathe.
Maybe. I could see Charlie die. I could do without Charlie.
He's like an Aaron Schwartz type character.
Yeah, absolutely.
The technological abstraction gets to his head and he has to end it.
Yeah. Forbid. Like,
R.I.P. Aaron Schwartz, though. Fuck you guys, what you did to him.
Oh, man. Aaron Schwartz, the Reddit guy?
Yeah.
As someone who is not a big fan of Reddit, but, you know, I can be sad about a death of a young man who is literary, actually, and sad. Yeah. But poor Adam Schwartz. But fuck Charlie. Aaron Schwartz.
I can't remember.
But fuck Charlie. What's his last name? No one gives a shit.
Yeah, I don't
because
know.
He's awful. I would like to see Charlie die. I'd love to see more Colin Quinn as the
owner of Grumpy's with a degenerative kidney disorder. Yeah. Or whatever.
What was going on there? That was great.
I don't have a lot of time, Ray.
I loved Colin Quinn, and as a fan of Colin Quinn's weekend updates, they were like clumsy and weird and timed horribly.
Well, he was drunk half the time. Definitely drunk half the time.
I would love to see more Colin Quinn. He was great, and it was really sad that he might die. So more Jessa, more Colin Quinn, less Charlie, if not completely eradicate Charlie.
You'd like to see Charlie die. What character would you like to see live forever?
Live forever?
Tuck Everlasting type deal. She finds the spring.
Jessa, because I don't want her to look like she's 50 when she's 30.
It's a shame.
It is going to be a shame. She's put her body through the ringer. She's lived it up. So I would like to see her live forever because she's a riot. She's fantastic. I loved in that first season when they go to that remarkably accurate Bushwick factory or warehouse party.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the roof with creepy parent of the kid she's babysitting, and those crusty punks are there.
The crusties. I like to call them junkers.
Well, she calls them crusties. Like, you degenerate crusty fuck. You piece of shit. It was just hilarious. And they come and kick the guy's ass who's with her, but
then he tries the make-out move.
Yeah.
So I would like to see just everything that they've set up in this season finale just get destroyed.
Destroyed.
Just destroyed.
Yeah. Did it seem to you like
it's like Ray needs to buy the 4-bit app because he can't stop harassing Shosh. Adam tries to kill Hannah and Charlie's poor, stupid, genuine heart just gets subsumed by Marnie's superficiality.
What if Ray becomes the primary prophet for Forbid because he's he can't stop talking with Shoshers. Yeah, I understand. I mean, the last thing I wanted from Marnie, who, like I said, I really like a lot, was her to get back with Terrible Charlie. I was kind of upset about Adam's Woody Allen Manhattan running towards Hannah, just because.
See, I couldn't tell if we were supposed to feel like, oh, this is romantic.
Is this romantic?
Because no, you're not supposed to feel that at all, are you?
I don't know.
They were playing it as if it was.
The music was really, is really
epic. I didn't know that Lena Dunham dates the dude from Fun.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
because when I hear Fun? Yeah, I hear that band,
okay,
my body just fills with dread, just like vomit that I can't suppress, because that band is just a vacuum of everything that has ever meant anything in music.
So okay, so is that do you think that's a hat tip, if you will, to her?
But
love
I mean, it's definitely supposed to be set up as romantic and like.
I think so. I mean, he lifts her up like he's Fabio or something. And he's shirtless, and it's like he looks
fantastic. Can you get away with being shirtless on the subway?
I don't know. I've never seen anyone shirtless on the subway.
Neither have I.
So it was late at night, and knowing Adam, he probably like hopped the turnstile and just like.
Actually, no, I've seen people shirtless on the subway before.
Oh, yeah? Were they?
These were like tweens, though, coming from a dubstep concert, and they were just like fucked up, lying on the ground. Like they had their wife beaters on, like the tie-dye ones, they were all ripped.
And they were 13-year-old ripped kids. Yeah. They've had like six-packs since they were 10 and stuff. It's like really ridiculous.
So I guess it's plausible. Not plausible, FaceTiming when you don't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Adam, first of all, did...
But I love when he's punching the phone, he's like, Shiri, operate.
Well, he has gloves on, so you can't do anything.
Right. He has woodworking gloves. Yeah. So he was smashing shit.
Wait. Do you think that... What's his new girlfriend's name?
Natalia.
Do you think Natalia was like, get an iPhone and not this shitty phone or something?
Why he switched off the flip phone?
He got off his parents' plan, finally. or his grandma's plan or something. And everyone in that show is on their parents' plan, except for maybe Jessa, who I don't even know. She does have a phone.
She's definitely not on her parents' plan. I don't even think she has a phone, though.
Yeah. No, she does. Remember? Because she gives the guy the phone.
Oh,
she's
correct.
Like,
correct.
You have lots of text messages here. Mind your own fucking business. It's fantastic.
Say, what did you feel about the finale? Did it work?
I didn't like it.
Neither did
I. No, I didn't like it. I thought it was a bunch of...
It's the worst episode of the whole season, I think.
I would agree. It was a bunch of cop-outs. I would be interested to talk to...
In the grand scheme, I'm sure it might work out, but right now it seems like a cop-out.
I would be interested to hear what some females think about the Adam Squid in the Whale / Woody Allen Manhattan running towards Hannah's house moment, and whether that's romantic or creepy, especially since she's like begging him not to come.
She's obviously in like a mental duress, has no
very
little awareness.
So I don't know. And I would definitely take that in consideration because, you know, I'm a dude who like
has run through New York.
No, I initially repel at like such like blatant passion because passion is like whatever. As a very
farce.
As a very dispassionate, hateful man, I don't like that. But I would be interested to hear, so maybe if someone wants to tell me if Adam's antics were romantic or not, I'd be very curious.
It's what the comment section is for, people. Let us know what you think.
But I didn't like it. I thought that...
Too many bows tied.
Exactly, too many bows tied. The only one we didn't hear from was Jessa, really, except for that kind of hilarious voicemail that Hannah left on Jessa's phone. But yeah, so no, I wasn't especially pleased. I would have liked it to be a little bit more ambiguous. I really liked the ending of the first season.
Oh, the first season is a great ending. Oh, I think on Guys on Girls they describe it as a Chekhovian zero ending.
Holy crap, Haggers!
On that note, finally, which girl's character are you inside and out?
Can I have one for inside and one for outside?
Oh, I certainly do.
Why don't you go first and let me think about this?
Outside, of course, I'm Charlie. Handsome. I look great in tucked-in shirts.
You do.
It's true. But on the inside, I'm a Ray.
You're so a Ray on the inside.
Just hate everything.
Yeah.
A failure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Getting dumped by NYU girls. Mm-hmm. Just like... I'm just in the deepest state of denial about it, so...
I think on the outside, I am probably a Patrick Wilson. I'm just kidding. I am probably a... maybe... I kind of wanted to be a girl. I would... I project...
I read that before.
I project a Jessa, or that's my goal, but I'm pretty sure it fails.
You're aspiring for a Jessa?
I'm aspiring for a Jessa, and I'm pretty sure it fails miserably, so I probably come off more like a neurotic Hannah. But on the inside, I think I am a Ray. Like, hateful and just misanthropic and a tender little side, sure, why not? But mostly just... Love, no, I don't know.
Love of literature, because, love of little women.
Because I don't want to be a loser like Ray, you know?
Is he a loser, though?
He's ambitionless. That's for sure.
He's getting his Latin studies PhD.
He quit. He's not going back. Instead of going back, he's going to take the managing job at Grumpy's.
Grumpy's International, yeah. CEO.
So, no, I'm not Ray. And on the inside, fuck it. I'm a Charlie.
We all wish we could be Charlies, but maybe we're all Rays.
Genius developers where you develop an app in like a month and sell it for millions of dollars. Yeah, that's realistic.
Sure, yeah, you felt the crush a little of how many episodes there were with the Charlie storyline where all of a sudden someone turns around like, oh yeah, Charlie invented app, he's a millionaire. And then also that Hannah has OCD, although they did set it up apparently with little drops beforehand.
But oh, I don't remember
it
that.
Comes on like an onset. In the first season, mm-hmm. when her and Marnie are having some fight, Marnie's like, oh, you think I'm weird? Well, you're the one who had to masturbate 8 times before you could go to sleep at night.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Does Lena Dunham have OCD in real life?
She has, I think, to a lesser extent, but she does, okay. Apparently.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'd like to see more of that, though.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that's like a cheap way to endear that character to people that don't like her, though? That now that she has this sort of grab-all explanation for her... But less attractive
perhaps,
features.
I mean, in terms of just, like, creating a drama in the story, and this is something you can follow along and relate to. I mean, I think a lot of plot points and stories are kind of...
Problem-solving?
Exactly, or exploitative and just, like, manipulative and trying to get your emotions going. But at the same time, it did actually feel pretty accurate. I mean, it didn't onset until she started talking to Adam, right? Like, once she talked to Adam on the... I don't remember, but something...
Well, I think the actual catalyst of when it returns is the Patrick Wilson episode, because the
next
episode...
That's right.
The next episode, I couldn't tell if she, like, picks up. It's, like, cuts to her crying, mm-hmm. like, as the first shot of her walking down the street doing the eight, like, looking over her shoulder thing. So I was like, oh, is this just a continuation of that scene? Which mm-hmm. would be interesting, but mm-hmm. I think there might be an episode in between. Mm-hmm. But we don't know, I guess, the chronology.
So they all kind of blend together, which is actually a pretty good testament to the quality of the show. You know, it doesn't feel episodic as much as it feels like a good extension of a
novelistic
of
novelistic.
Yeah, yeah, that's something Haggis would say.
the imposing of the novel and the serialized narrative form.
But what does Haggis say? Like, TV shows are too long.
Yes, the ideal format is the miniseries.
He also wrote an article about was the Death Star a fucking inside job?
Yeah, so let's do some recommended reading from Hagland before we sign off. So Dave is going to recommend Was the Death Star an Inside
Job? I'll recommend
job.
That. And for Eglund, the guy who wrote the infamous episode 5 commentary.
One man's trash.
He wrote, is that what it's called?
That's the episode.
Oh, that's the episode? Good title.
Great title.
Yeah. She apparently wrote
it in a fever dream over one night.
I dig it. Yeah. It's great. He wrote, Eglin, I think that's his name, he wrote this really horrendous article about his life as like an internet celebrity or something for a moment, and it starts off with him talking about how he saw his ex-girlfriend like doing like porno, and it like sent him in like a whirlwind, and then it goes from there. Horrendous. And
you don't have the title of that one?
I don't. I forgot. It's like My Life as an Internet Celebrity or something. It's awful. It's like one of the only things he wrote, actually, so if you click on episode 5 on his name, it'll like come up pretty quickly, and it's atrocious.
Yeah, and for Hagland, I'm just going to recommend Blurg, The Linguistic Legacy of 30 Rock. It's a beautiful examination by Hagland of how 30 Rock has impacted the nomenclature.
Well, I mean,
the lexicon of the American upper middle class.
What did he say about Freud in the last Was it the last episode?
The last episode that Hannah's search for a paternalistic figure was classically Freudian.
Oh, wait. To me, it was a bit Freudian.
Yes.
Hannah had been searching for a father figure all episode. After phoning her actual father and trying his patience, she reminisced with Laird about how her dad used to protect her from broken glass. And now there's no one around to do that. And then came Adam, calling her kid, rescuing her from himself, lifting and cradling her voluptuous, what the fuck, voluptuous body as though she were a tiny toddler. Putting that aside for a moment, my personal trauma at seeing a WB star of my youth topless, am I right that Adam's running into Hannah prompting that sexual breakdown? My personal trauma at seeing a WB star of my youth, which is Natalia,
who was on Roswell.
Roswell. Wow. Oh, that's not Haglund. That's some bro named Stevenson.
Sorry, Hags.
But Haggers wrote, I think they go hand in hand. Deep. Can I just really quickly talk about just Haggers for a moment?
And go
just
nuts,
like the
yeah.
things. Well, the things that guys on girls.
Let's close out with that.
We're going to close out on this. I made a list of things Hags and Co. They call her Hannah and Co. or Lena Dunham and Co. So things Hags and Co. hate. And these are all the senior Slate editors who, again, have nothing better to do than rag on girls. These bros hate Marnie. They hate Oberlin, which we've talked about. They hate pregnant bellies. They hate 20-somethings trying to be post-race as if being colorblind is impossible and we should all just fucking give up, right? They hate girls' fashion. Like, they hate what Jessa wears and they hate what Hannah wears, especially. They hate seeing Hannah happy. case in point, episode 5 discussion. They hate urinary tract infections,
which was so do I. Though I can empathize with that.
Right,
point.
But they hate urinary tract infections
as plot points,
as plot points, or as jokes displayed in front of them because they're pansies.
If you're gonna do UTIs, yeah. Do them right. Give credence to UTIs.
They hate urinary tract infections and they hate themselves. Things Hags and Co. love, shitting on Adam and discussing their theories regarding the show. They always do this. Brian Lauder, who is another editor, he's like, I have a controversial theory for why this episode was so funny, a total lack of album. And then Haglund's like, we are going to discuss that theory in more detail. Like, your theory? Are you fucking kidding me?
That Adam and humor are inversely proportional.
Oh my good God. Stuff.
That's all great, Dave. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
You covered everything?
We covered most of it. I hope it comes off how horrible guys and girls are. I mean, I think at the end we just wanted to talk about how good girls is and how. But let's not forget that the main point of this podcast was for all of us to just revel in the absolute detritus that is guys on girls. And I recommend all of you see it. And you know what? Let's do season 3. Can't wait.
We'll see you guys then.
Well, not to interrupt you, but perhaps this will be the, like, Jon Stewart on Crossfire getting a canceled moment for guys on girls. Dare to dream.
Doubt it.
Haggers, if you want to meet up again, if you want to come in and do a little rebuttal, we'd love that.
Thanks again.
Thank you.